Where is the world changing? For us, it was the fact that like digital financial services, we believed were going to fundamentally transform the entire industry. It wasn't a small innovation. It wasn't like a cute little thing. It was like revolutionary to the entire financial services industry, which is like basically the largest industry by GDP.
Welcome to the Just Raise podcast. I'm your host, Joe Sweeney. And today's episode is from our first live recording with Everett Cook, founder and CEO of Roe. Roe is a fintech banking platform for businesses. But what's interesting is Roe isn't reinventing finance. They're building a better customer experience on top of existing US banks, a modern software front end for US banks with the quality that you'd expect from a killer Silicon Valley startup, which Roe is. They raised $75 million less than a year ago from DFJ. We dive into how that position between customers and banks allows Roe to own the customer experience, which is a powerful position to be in, and how this partnership model could allow Roe to scale across the banking system, which is one of the largest industries in the world. So with that, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Everett Cook, CEO of Roe. One thing I'd love to ask people that I'm told is one of the best questions that I always forget to ask. Why did you name the company Roe?
Ah, okay. So I get asked that a lot because it's not super obvious. But I spent about 10 years before starting Roe as a hedge fund portfolio manager analyst and always spent a lot of time in the options market. Roe is like the way an option changes with the change in interest rate. If you think about the options Greeks, it's actually the least important of them, but it matters at times. For us, it was a metaphor for how we improve the trajectory of our companies and the companies that are on Roe.
Fintech is booming right now, but how did you in particular end up starting this company right now?
I left my previous job and started to look at the market the same way as an entrepreneur, the same way that I did as an investor, which is you always start with like a top-down thesis. You're like, where is the world changing? What is a durable sort of transformational thing that maybe people don't really appreciate? For us, it was the fact that like digital financial services, we believed were going to fundamentally transform the entire industry. It wasn't a small innovation. It wasn't like a cute little thing. It was like revolutionary to the entire financial services industry, which is like basically the largest industry by GDP. And so we started there. And then we said, look, like where is there a place where you have a really underserved user and a really not great solutions, not great existing products and services. And for us, it was, we saw a lot of stuff that was happening in the consumer space that was really interesting. The consumer kind of moved first in like 2015, 16, 17. And really nobody had built like great products for businesses of scale. And we asked ourselves like, why had nobody done this, right? That's normally, a good question to ask. And what we came up with was like, well, number one, it's hard. It's a lot of software. It's a lot of engineering. It's like hardcore technology. And number two, like nobody had tried, frankly. And those are pretty good reasons to start a business. Generally, if it's too easy, it's probably a bunch of people that are going to do it. So yeah, that's how we started.
Yeah. So you guys are a bank for businesses. I didn't realize at first, you're not a bank for tech startups. You're a bank fundamentally for like middle market construction companies, cement companies, things like that.
So we're not a bank. And I think I have to say that technically, but we are a finance platform and we offer banking services as well as corporate cards, AP, spend management. And basically anytime you touch your money, that can start and end inside Roe. We can talk more about that in a minute. But yeah, we think about our customer, we were really thinking about like, look, like we love tech startups. We have a number of them, but really the market is much bigger than that. It is, all the companies that you interact with any given day. Those are the ones that we believe like have the most complexity, the most need for technology, and frankly, like the least good solutions today. So that's where we spend our time.
Yeah. And it feels like that's really the core thing here is that, like you said, you're not a bank because what you really are is like a better user experience on top of banks.
That's right.
So you have partnerships with Webster Bank and other banks, and you're like a superhuman on top of Gmail. you are fundamentally just building something better on top.
That's right. Like, we think about it as we're equal parts financial services and technology. And so we view like banking, corporate cards, like payments in general is like pretty commoditized. Like, generally the banks are pretty good at, you know, being a bucket to store your money, moving it from point A to point B. You swipe a card at point of checkout, generally works. These things are all fine. This is not new territory, right? What was missing from that equation is, you know, especially in a corporate setting, like, what happens before that transaction and what happens after it? And that's where all the work exists. And so today, like, traditional financial institutions weren't really doing much to solve that. You had this like growth of software companies that kind of sat on top, piped in and out data, and helped you make sense of it, you know, help you manage your spending, expenses, stuff like that, capture receipts. And that felt like kind of a Frankenstein. It was like, you know, most companies have 4, 5, 8 different products to do one job. And so we were like, look, if you just wipe the slate clean, if you start from a first principles perspective and build up, like, what should that look like? It should be one product. It's really one thing. But today it's like 8. So that's sort of what we ended up doing. And that's why, like, we are, you know, much more interesting, much more powerful than a traditional financial institution that doesn't have that sort of technology core that we do.
But at the back end, you're not actually giving out loans, deploying customer funds, doing all the things that banks.
That's right. I mean, we partner with banks. And what that means is, like, you know, company cash sits inside FDIC insured banks, moves in and out from there. We are kind of a layer on top of them in a lot of ways. What it means is, like, we can focus on building awesome user experiences, great technology, delivering amazing service, and they can focus on what they're really good at, which is, like, managing those payments, reserve requirements, capital adequacy, lending those deposits out. Banks aren't technology companies. Technology companies aren't banks. And that's why we partner.
And if you can build that front end for one bank, you can potentially do it for... There are a lot of banks in the US. And yeah, most of them are not tech-oriented, I guess, is what I would say.
For sure. I mean, that said, like, we want to preserve the user experience that our customers have and truly own that experience. So, you know, we get asked all the time by financial institutions, hey, can we, like, license your software or white label it or whatever? We always say no, because, like, I don't believe, like, it would be, you know, it would be the same. And so while we can do that, we have a really strong relationship with the banks that we work with today. And, you know, that enables us to build the products that we deliver right now.
So if you're starting from scratch, building Roe, what would you do fundamentally differently?
Yeah, we're really lucky. We got a lot of things right. I think as a founder, and advice I would give almost any founder is, like, probably the one thing I personally would have done differently is I would have hired HR as one of my first hires instead of, like, when you get, you know, sort of more of a team. You always think about it as, okay, I'm going to add all this operations, administrative stuff later when I'm at 10, 20, 30, 50 employees. It would make your life a lot easier if you just do that earlier. So I'd say that's the one, like, actionable thing that I probably learned. But I'm sure there's a lot of others. But, you know, so far things have gone really well.
Why HR?
Like, because, like, your job as a founder is to build a team, right? Day one, like, it's you and maybe a co-founder. So your main job is to build a team. So why would you not hire, like, someone that can help you do that as their primary job?
That does make a lot of sense when you put it that way.
Anyway, most people get that backwards. I got that backwards. But, you know, we have a great team now.
Yeah, when you think about the broader entire fintech market. So I'm always curious, you know, there are so many banks, and there are so many now neobanks that are all getting started up, yeah, and a million different divisions for all of these businesses in the US.
Yeah.
What do you think the end state looks like? Like, where does this settle out? Yeah. Does Roe end up just becoming the front end for all of the banks, or?
I think the end state is basically a couple things. I think number one, I think people still underestimate the scale of this space. All those companies you mentioned, like, you know, represent less than 2% of activity in this market on the corporate side. I'm not sure what it is on the consumer side. So, you know, there's a really long way to go, first of all. And I think the scale of this space is, like, as large as search, as large as any other space, you know, in the tech industry, in the world, really. I think people still think about it in this small box of fintech. The second thing is for us, I don't think we're, like, we end up being that, but I think it's more technology companies build solutions for specific audiences and continue to partner with banks, right? Banks kind of need to have a diversified portfolio. They need to do everything. They need to serve tiny consumers all the way up to the largest, you know, corporations. But as a fintech, you don't have to do that. You can choose one slice of that and be really, really good at that. And that's what we try to do at Roe. try to be really good at serving those sort of mid-market businesses and helping them sort of with the finance operations.
Yeah, I had Doug Ludlow on the show a while back, founder of Main Street.
Oh, cool.
And he talks about how if you look at finance and banking in general, the amount of money flowing from New York to Hong Kong to London and everywhere in between, every single niche in that market could be like a multi-trillion dollar market.
Yeah. Multi-trillion may be a stretch, but there's a big market in each one of those corridors for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you look at the amount of money they're moving and...
Yeah.
Yeah. So that brings me to how does Roe actually make money?
Yeah. So we partner with our banks, our bank partners, and have revenue share agreements with them. So the same way that a bank makes money, we make money. We just split that in a certain way with our partners.
And then as your clients scale, whether they're early stage startups or a construction company or
yeah.
a manufacturing company,
yeah.
you will also have a piece of those deposits.
That's right. It's like, it's volume driven. And when they grow, we go.
Hmm. And then when you go to your partners, whether it's Webster Bank or these others, you can go to them and say, we'll be able to bring in a massive amount of deposits that you never will be able to because we're a venture-backed startup with fundamentally good technology.
I think what the banks realize is that, and I think it took them a little bit to do this, but I think generally they understand this now, which is like they're never going to win at building like great technology. Like they're not. And they understand what we understood too, which is that's what customers really want. Like that is... You know, at the end of the day, you know, they're not looking for, you know, lunch once a year or whatever, you know, like ancillary services are provided. They're looking for technology to help them run their business more efficiently and get on with their day.
So you raised $75 million 18 months ago, $100 million in debt financing almost 2 years ago. And your team has just blown up over the last couple of years. And you were saying earlier how... As an executive, your whole job now is to just hire really smart people. How do you think about hiring a team, bringing on really top A players, and just managing those people in your day-to-day? It feels like that must be drastically different than what you did 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, your job really changes as a founder over time. We raised our Series B in October of last year. We raised our Series A about 18 months ago, I believe. For us, and like it is kind of amazing to think back to, you know, when it was like three people to 30, 60 to now about 170. Your job changes, the company changes. If you do things right, your job as a CEO generally gets easier because you start out having like, you know, literally having to do everything. And nobody's good at everything, no matter how super, you know, super talented you are. So you're doing a lot of things that you may not be the best at. And there's like a principle that as CEO, you always want to be, but this is really extends to basically anybody at a company, frankly. You want to be trying to just do the things that you are literally the best at and trying to find other people that are the best to do other things. So as you build that team, you have more people around you that are the best at X, Y, or Z. It could be marketing, sales, engineering, product, finance. And so if you do your job right, it gets easier. But it's hard. You know, you have to continue to find really bright people and find interesting problems for them to work on. And that's kind of how you end up spending your day as, you know, at a scaled up company.
So I probably should ask, as with the last 3 weeks have told us, the market is declining, or as a CEO, how do you plan to manage through, you know, compression for growth stage companies? How do you think you'll be able to handle this type of down cycle in the market that someone like me and probably everyone in the audience has never seen in their working careers?
Right. So, I mean, a couple of things. First of all, like downturns, recessions are not a mythical beast. They happen. Like it's a normal part of the cycle. It means you have to be thoughtful about the way you spend capital and invest that. We've kind of always tried to do that, to be honest. We never tried to grow for growth's sake. We tried to always build a sustainable business. We tried to raise enough capital so that we can make long-term bets and, you know, have a duration to be able to do that. And we tried to raise our last round at a valuation that we felt like was fair. It wasn't the highest bid. You know, I don't believe in like maximizing for that. I believe in maximizing for like who's the long-term partner that you can see this through together for 5-10 years. For people that are trying to navigate the you know, a market that is declining, I think you just need to think about fundamentals. It's like, look, you know, we're back to basics. This is back to normal. This is a renormalization. In my opinion, like the last 2 years were an aberration. Fundamentally, are you building a business? If the answer is yes, like you're fine, honestly. But don't do things that are unsustainable. Don't do things where you're depending on, you know, the next guy to believe you, the next guy to believe you, et cetera. Try to always put yourself in the driver's seat.
Are there any companies that you think are really interesting that we should be paying attention to for 18 months from now?
I mean, there are a ton of really interesting companies. I don't have like a good example on the top of my head, but what about you? Who are you paying attention to?
Well, you know, 6 months ago, I had a lot of really interesting crypto companies and now I have none. but there are a couple of cool ones. One I just wrote about that I think is fascinating is this company Formic.
Okay.
They, you know, as we see like deglobalization, supply chains collapse, they just are going into American factories, which apparently 90% of American factories don't have a single robot, which I find, wild. But they're mostly just small, medium-sized businesses. And they're going into factories, and instead of having them pay $100,000 or $1.5 million for a robot, having it arrive and then seeing if it works, they go in with robots and they're like, all right, we'll deploy it for you. You tell us what you need it to do. And then you pay the robot $8 an hour when it's working. So really interesting. I think there's a lot of like hard tech that's changing things.
Yeah.
That's probably mine.
That's a cool one. You see, that's really cool.
Yeah. Last question I have for everybody on the show is about vision. Where do you want to see Ro in 20 years from now?
I truly believe like Ro and companies like Ro can grow to a scale where they rival institutions like JP Morgan, Bank of America. I don't think that's like of a super distant future, honestly. What has happened over the past couple of years, like if you just continue to extrapolate, you continue to scale, that is the direction we're heading. And so that's really where I want to see us. That's, I think, the, you know, the financial services companies of the future are tech companies, and that's the mission we're on.
It's a really cool vision, and I'm looking forward to seeing where Ro goes.
Awesome. Thank you.